This is Those Who Show Up Decide with Paul, Master Sergeant Chez Sanchez, creating storms of thought wherever he goes, flooding his environment with provoking personality and persuasion. He doesn't want you to think like him. He just wants you to think. He knows that only those who show up decide. And now for your host, Master Sergeant Chez.
And good morning, sports fans. This is Saturday, June 25th, 2016. I almost said 1916. Oh my gosh, I'm not quite that old. But good morning. I hope you guys got your coffee. I will be boring you to tears. I mean, informing you on the subjects of the week and exactly what's going on for about the next hour. We're going to be talking about everything from international news all the way down to things right here in our own little big basin. You like that? Little big basin? I'm even going to manage to connect the international news right here to Alamogordo. So without, oh, and before I forget, as I promised you for, I don't know what, 3 weeks now, we are actually going to put in the John Sugg interview and the Robin Holmes interview at the towards the second half of the show. Those are from back on June 7th when we had the primary elections. And speaking of elections, I'm about to take you actually overseas. And what we're going to do is we're going to be talking about the huge vote out there involving England leaving the European Union. And as I said, I'm going to tie that straight here to the Alamogordo Otero County, Big Basin area. But before I hit that, of course, I got to pay a couple of bills real quick. Let's talk about my good friends, Amy and John Paul over at 54 Towing. We don't want an arm and a leg. We just want your toes. In my humble opinion, best towing company in the Tularosa Basin. You can reach them at 575-585-9097. Really good people, fair prices, good, hard, honest work, just the way we want it here in the Big Basin. International news, big stuff going on this week. We're going to actually combine international and national and tie it right here to the county all in one shot. I'm going to try to run through this real quick because we want to make sure we get those other interviews in at the end of the show. But we're going to start with Brexit. That is, for some people who may not know, don't pay attention to the international news, is England just had a referendum where they went to vote to decide if England was going to stay in the European Union, which is a huge group. I believe it's 28 nations that combined together to form a group of trading partners, France, England, Germany, etc. All of those European nations are together in the European Union. This is started, I want to say, back in 1973, and basically allows both people as well as products to travel freely within the European Union without having to get passports, without additional taxes and tariffs at each border. Those type of things made it very easy for trade to happen within the European Union. However, it also created a situation, particularly with the latest immigration refugee waves that are coming out of the Middle East, where the European Union was dictating to the individual countries and working out deals as to how many of these refugees were going to be taken in by each country. There's a lot of other reasons that this vote was up. It's also about sovereign nationality, your individual nation and your own cultures. I am not at all a believer in, as was alluded publicly to by George Bush Sr. Many years ago in a nationally televised speech where he talked about a new world order. I don't believe in that. I think that our cultures across our planet are so vastly different. Our values and our beliefs are so vastly different. I personally don't see how one central government could manage an entire planet. I mean, the United Nations, they can't even sit down and have dinner together without practically causing international crises. So how we could have a world government of some type, I don't see it, nor do I want it. I think our separate cultures are what makes us a beautiful planet. I think almost every culture, of course, there is exceptions, as you know, as an example, my lack of good friends over in ISIS and those barbarians. I just think that there's beautiful elements of every culture. I think when we do bring those cultures together to exchange ideas, trade, culture, etc., I think it's a really beautiful thing. I think it vastly enriches our world. However, that doesn't mean we should all play by the same rules. I think a rule in India has nothing to do with a rule here in the Midwest. We could just talk about that for days. Either way, they had the vote out there in England over what was called Brexit, Britain's exit from the European Union. I want to say that the polling before the vote knew that it was going to be extremely close, but I believe the edge was given to what they called the Stay campaign, in other words, not leaving the European Union. And if you'd asked me, my money would have absolutely been on Britain staying within the Union. That would have been the result of the vote. Obviously, I am clueless, which, of course, many people, you know, like my good friends Nadia and Eddie, as well as Bill and Susan will tell you I'm clueless, but, you know, no hard feelings there. Either case, it did come out fairly razor thin, and it came out where England is going to leave the European Union. This, of course, immediately sent the world markets into turmoil. I'm not an economist. I just know when somebody says that the Dow's down 600 points, that's a bad thing. That's your investment portfolios, that's your retirement, hedge funds, etc., that are losing vast amounts of money when the stock prices go down for individual stocks, depending on how you're invested. In either case, it has thrown the world in such turmoil the day after this vote, and we're looking at about another year to 2 years of negotiations to properly detach England from the European Union. In the meantime, what about the rest of, the European Union? The day after the vote and the success of the Leave campaign, with Britain, the citizens of England, saying that they want to regain and retain their sovereignty, right-wing parties in France, in Germany, across the European Union are calling for their own referendums. In the Netherlands, they want to call it Nexit, the Netherlands exit. So you're looking at, across the board, many, many countries are wanting, or at least some of their political parties, are also wanting to split away from the grand experiment of the European Union, which, like I said, I think was starting with the United Nations, or the League of Nations, if you want to go far enough back. All of those things were headed towards world governments. And we've gotten closer and closer, and I think people are starting to see that maybe it's not going to work. So over the next couple of years, I think you can expect these referendums in other countries. I think some will be successful, and those countries will depart from the European Union. I think others will not be successful, and they will stay together and maintain their trading and visa partnerships. It's a hugely complex issue, and I don't have anything approaching the knowledge level to really talk on it authoritatively. But what I can do is directly connect Brexit, the England's exit from the European Union, right here to New Mexico, because again, you know, some people here in the valley or in the basin are saying, what's this got to do with me? Well, beyond the impact on the world markets, what you've also got is the fact that we do export things right here from New Mexico, as well as right here in Alamogordo. There is a company, a technology firm. I'm not going to mention the name. I was previously associated with them for a very brief period of time. And what the deal is that they, while I was working for them, signed a pretty important contract to talk about joint ventures between the company here in Alamogordo and a company in England. Now, is Brexit going to positively or negatively impact that contract? I have no idea. I don't know the details of the contract. I am not associated with that business anymore. I don't know. What I do know is it will impact the contract in some way. You can't have an entire country separating from the European Union, having to renegotiate every single trade deal that they've got as a result of that, and not expect it to have an impact on any company that does business in England. And as a result, I wonder, is that going to be a positive or a negative influence? Of course, I hope it will be positive. I hope that it will make it easier for our company here in Alamogordo to do business over in England. And I hope it brings more jobs, as it was intended originally, to Alamogordo. But is that what's going to happen? I don't know. We're going to have to see. But in the meantime, yes, things that happen a half a world away absolutely impact us right here in New Mexico, in the Big Basin. And that goes for my national listeners, where things do impact you in your hometown USA, whether it be a small town, a big town. Friends of mine that might listen in New York and in Washington, huge impact there. How does it play in Peoria? I have no idea, but I bet there is some impact that will be felt there as a result of this. And the more that the European Union does break up, the more impact you will see. So let's move on from Brexit. We're going to hit the national news here in just a second. Let me pay another bill real quick. We're going to talk about my good friends Devin and Chris down at MDC Computers. They sell new computers, used computers. They will fix your computer. They will scrub viruses off of it. They will help you transfer files to and fro. They sell monitors. They sell gaming equipment. They advise you on what programs you need to accomplish certain projects. Basically, if it's involved in a computer, they either know it and do it, or they can find the information and give you good advice. I've seen them on more than one occasion tell a person that the expertise that they have, they don't sell that particular piece of equipment, they don't do that particular job, and as a result, they've referred that person to another place online, whatever the case may be, that will serve them properly. They also, by the way, before I forget, Devin does a fabulous job about repairing iPhones. If you drop it and crack your screen or anything else, he maintains both. He maintains my iPhone. He maintains my computers. I rely on MDC Computers for all of my needs. And I mean that sincerely. I'm down there regularly. They're also good friends of mine. Their number is 575-437-7600. Call Devin and Chris and tell them Master Sergeant Chez sent you. They're located on the corner of 12th and White Sands Boulevard here in Alamogordo, New Mexico. So that's my shout out to MDC Computers. Let's move on to the national news. And in the national news, what I'm going to do is I was going to talk about, there's an article here about Clinton State Department calendar missing scores of entries. All I'll say about that is it's yet another example of how she maintained her calendars, maintained her emails on private servers, doesn't want the American people to know, and we do have a right to know. If this was a Republican Secretary of State, the Democrats would be going insane. We have a right to know what business she did, what connection she has, how her foundation, which takes in millions of dollars from across the world. In fact, there was an article the other day about how, you know, Clinton, obviously Democrat and extremely supportive, at least verbally, of the LGBTQ community, referenced the Orlando massacre that just occurred. She took in over $25 million since the foundation, the Clinton Foundation, has started, from Middle Eastern countries, where to be a homosexual means you are imprisoned, and in some cases, it's the death penalty. So if you are so LGBT friendly, how do you take money from countries that kill, not don't like, I mean kill, that particular those particular individuals? I don't get how she can sleep at night, but that's what happens. So what that is my brief comment about her missing emails and calendar, and we don't know what she did when she was Secretary of State. But what I will do is I will talk a little bit, of course, with the Brexit, which I just talked about in international news. You've got Donald saying it's a great thing. He's very pro sovereignty of nations. He wants the United States to regain its stature in the world as a separate nation. And of course, he looks at America, as we all do, as a nation, the United States. United States of America together. But you have to realize that the United States is just that. We are separate states with separate cultures. What flies in New Mexico drops like a rock in New York and California, and vice versa. So here's my, I guess, thought for the day on the impact of Brexit, the possible breakup of the European Union, and how does it relate right here nationally to the United States of America? Take your computer and Google red and blue map. And what you're going to see is various websites have these, what they estimate, both based off opinion polls, etc., what states are right, the right-wing Republicans, what states are left-wing Democrats. And what you're going to see is that the West Coast, primarily California, and the Northeast are deep blue. There's a couple of spots of blue in the middle. New Mexico is one of those. And then the vast majority, if you just look at landmass, what they call fondly in Washington, the flyover states, because when you go from New York or Washington to California, you fly over the rest of us, and we don't count. But those flyover states were mainly red. And here's the thing, when we were a country that could talk with each other and could attempt to work things out politically, professionally, I think that the United States is a great thing. I think it was a grand experiment, and yes, I said the word was in that sentence. The problem is that we are so divisive, so separated, so unbelievably angry at the opposite side from what our own political beliefs are, and this goes for both sides, that it is irredeemable. I don't know that it's even possible for us to continue this way. So my comment on this particular thought is simply that when you take a look at that red and blue states, you can even click in and go to, say, red and blue New Mexico and take a look where the population centers are, what's blue, what's red. And what you'll see is that even in New Mexico, we've got Doña Ana County, Bernalillo County, Santa Fe County that are deep blue. And you take a look at Otero County, and that's a deep red. And many other counties in New Mexico, if you just look at number of counties and landmass, you'll see that we're mainly red. But if you look at population centers, the urban areas, those are blue. So when votes occur in New Mexico, it's going to go the Democrat side, absolutely, simply because of where the numbers are. That I think will lead not that far in the future to states like New Mexico, Colorado's talked about this for a long time, into breaking up. We might have a new New Mexico where you're looking at a situation where the red counties break away because the values that the red has versus the values that the blue has are drastically and vastly different and opposed to one another and so angry at one another, I don't know that we can ever come back together. So once you start breaking states apart, then you got to start talking about breaking the United States apart. Texas has talked idly, people in Texas have talked a lot about breaking Texas away from the Union and going back to it being a republic as it originally was. And once one of those states, we'll start with the New Mexico example. I'm not saying it would happen here. We'll start with the New Mexico example. You have one state like New Mexico that breaks into two. The minute that happens, then the people in the two halves start wondering, should they even stay? Is America as the concept something that they even want to stay with? And that's when you start talking about seceding from the Union. That hasn't happened. Any attempt at that hasn't happened since, the Civil War. And what happens at that point is if, let's say, Texas was to go, or a broken state or a full red state was to break away from the Union, then it would be a domino effect. And I believe that is exactly what we're seeing with the European Union right now with Brexit, is that Britain has left, which is, I don't know. I don't live in Europe. I don't know what they think. I know what I see on the news, which includes, yes, Nadia, I watch, I've got MSNBC on my phone, NPR on my phone, and BBC on my phone, and yes, Eddie's favorite TV station and news source, Fox News, on my phone. But the point of the exercise is that by looking at all of this, it would have been my opinion sitting here in New Mexico that England wouldn't have left, yet it did. Now that it has, suddenly every other state, every other country within the European Union, which I'm sure has been talking about their own exits for a while, are massively empowered. It's now something that can be done. It has been demonstrated. This can happen. So the parties that wanted it for as long as they wanted it now can say, hey, look, they did it. And now the people that are in the kind of wanted column and the, I don't know, I could go either way column, they're going to suddenly say, hey, let's seriously consider this, which makes it an opportunity to be had for those countries. Then that relates, how does that play an impact right here in America? And that's where you have the situation where we start wondering, and I am openly wondering, and I'm sure many other talk show hosts have, and talking heads have talked about this before. I highly doubt I'm the first one, but I could really see this becoming a conversation in our country, where you would be looking at states breaking off from the union. And I, at this point, I am so fed up with business as usual, with the two-party system that we have, with the absolute unrelenting hatred between both sides, and I am not blaming either side exclusively, I should say. I am blaming both sides. There are very, very few people that can have a conversation and even agree to disagree on a subject. You know, in most cases, on both sides of the coin, right and left, and every shade in between, I have to convince you of what I believe to be truth and right. And you have to convince me of that. I mean, remember, go back to what one of my slogans for my show is I don't want you to think like me. I just want you to think. So right now, what I'm talking about, I would like you to think about it. I'd like you to say, are we irreparably damaged in our political system? And is the United States, which are separate individual and should be sovereign states with the massive federal overreach which happened in both Republican and Democrat administrations, is the federal government still serving us well? Should we be 50 separate countries? Should we be two or three or four separate countries with states essentially being parts of those countries? I don't know, but I have definitely, with Trump and Hillary, I am at the point that many friends of mine have been at for a while, and many of you listeners might have thought about, and many of you are going, Chez, what are you talking about? But I'm there. With Trump and Hillary, I don't know that this is something that can be recovered from. There's no statesmanship. It's gone. There is no statesmanship. There is no inclination on any level to solve anything. It's just gone, which is so disheartening to me, I almost want to cry. So what we're going to do is, instead of me crying, what I am going to do is I'm going to try to put a little hope back into our world. As we know from, I think, two shows ago, I did, for Flag Day, I did the Our Flag segment that I'm going to try to fit into all of my shows. It's supposed to be a 52-week series, which educates you guys on flag protocol, stuff like that. And so what I'm doing now is I'm going back to the very first one that I wrote. This is about 3-4 years ago I wrote it. And I'm going to insert that Our Flag here. And once that's done, we will switch back and we will probably head straight to the John Sugg interview. So here is my segment known as Our Flag. Greetings, my name is Paul Mass Sergeant Chez Sanchez, and this is Our Flag. This short program will be an ongoing series of spots highlighting the proper protocol for the care and display of our nation's colors, the Star-Spangled Banner. There are many customs, traditions, and guidelines regarding our flag. There are also many well-intentioned myths that are actually incorrect regarding the proper protocols. Through this series, I hope to correct those and show you where to find the information on how to properly set up and display the flag. All information I present here will be reference-based, and if I do discuss any customs and traditions, I'll state those as such. To begin with, let's work through the basics. To partially quote the Congressional Research Service Report, RL30243, the United States Flag Code is found in Title IV of the United States Code and the section of Title 36, which designates the Star-Spangled Banner as the national anthem and provides instructions on how to display the flag during its rendition. The Flag Code includes instruction and rules on such topics as the Pledge of Allegiance, display and use of the flag by civilians, time and occasion for display, position and manner of display, and how to show respect for the flag. This lays the groundwork for where the rules come from. So for today, let's just hit the obvious ones. The number one rule regarding our flag comes from USC Title IV, Chapter 1, Section 8. No disrespect should be shown to the flag of the United States of America. Every other rule, guideline, custom, and tradition must stem from this simple thought. Other basic rules are simple. The flag should always be highest on a single flagpole. It should always be displayed to its own right or in front. But trust me, defining its own right can be difficult. As time goes on in this series, I'll explore how to decide the right and left of the flag display in question. I look forward to this series and hope that each of you will also enjoy and perhaps learn from it. If any listeners have questions or comments about the content of this series, I welcome you to post comments on my Facebook page, Those Who Show Up Decide. The script from these spots will be posted in the notes section. And this week's Our Flag has been brought to you by the Otero County Conservatives. Come meet with us every third Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. in the New Heart Cowboy Church in Alamogordo, New Mexico, on the corner of White Sands Boulevard and Fairgrounds Road. We welcome all who are interested in taking our country back to the constitutional basis from whence we came. Come early and meet everybody while grabbing a bite to eat at the Hitchin Post right next door. Pastor Coy Griffin makes an awesome barbecue. That's the Otero County Conservatives meeting every third Thursday at 6 p.m. See you there. And this is Mass Sergeant Chez signing off from thebigbasin.com. May God bless you and may God bless America. Now, as promised, I'm going to get to those interviews that I've owed you guys for a few weeks now. We've got the interview with John Sugg, and right after that, we got the interview with Robin Holmes, both good friends of mine. Both won their primaries. Robin, of course, was uncontested. John was against running against Dave Sabias, and I'll talk about the details of those in just a moment. So let's not mess around. Let's just get straight to Mr. John Sugg.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Hey, we are here at the county clerk's office. We've got some results coming in, but before we talk about that, I've got Mr. Paul Chez Sanchez here, and he has got John Sugg on the line. Take it away there, Chez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jason, and thank you, Bob. John, are you with us?
I am.
Okay, John, so hang on one second.
Right there. That end should be the speaker.
Oh, okay.
It should be.
Gotcha.
Or the other end,
working,
the bottom end. I'm
we're
sorry.
We're working through some
technical.
Okay, say, are you there, John?
I'm still here.
Okay, good. Now we've got you good. So before we get into the actual interview for you, I've got a bit of news that I want to share with our listeners and with you. As of right this moment, the early results that are coming in, you have 919 votes, and Dave Sabias has 674, and that gives you a 57.69 versus 42.31% is where we're at right now. So at the moment you're leading, but we still have a lot of precincts to come in. So congratulations on your early lead. Why don't you, how do you feel about that?
Well, we're certainly in the process. I'm sure it's going to be a real tight. I think this is going to be a close race all the way to the end.
Well, you know, I also know that both you and Mr. Sabias definitely campaigned all the way through to the end. How do you feel about the campaign in general? Do you think it went pretty well?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I think everybody in their life should run for office at least once.
What, to get it out of their system and, you know, learn what it feels like to put a nail in your eye? Is that?
No. Actually, I'll tell you, this has been a life-altering experience. I've met some wonderful people. I've visited locations. But, you know, I've driven through a week before. I've never stopped and actually met the people. May he'll be home. I was up in, this is a judicial district that goes from Corona, New Mexico, down to Chaparral. I mean, you cover some ground in this judicial district. I've met so many wonderful people. I've met lifelong friends, win or lose. This has just been a humble experience for me. You find out who your friends are when you get in these kind of fights. You find out the true character of people, and this has been great. I've had tremendous support. I can't tell you how many people volunteer to help me get to this point. Win or lose, I'm just so proud of the campaign we ran. We stuck to the issues, we stuck to our records, and I'm proud of what we accomplished. Even if we lose, I just feel like that the people had a good choice in this election. There were two very different candidates, and whichever route they choose, I'm happy with the race we ran.
Well, I appreciate that. I will tell you that, excuse me, I have my own Facebook page, Those Who Show Up Decide, and I was at the debates, as you well know, and I thought that the debate, when it was all the questions, and by the way, Jason Kirkman is my co-host here this evening, and he was the guy that was asking you all those tough questions at the, and Jason didn't do that good a job, did he?
He did a great job. The privilege of appearing on the radio with Jason, I think it may have even been the very next day or a few days later, on the radio with him, and that was a great experience as well. That's the other thing. I mean, you get out onto the radio, you get to, you meet so many people in the media, in the political parties. It's just, that's why I really would encourage everybody, go out and run for office. I mean, it's not all, sunshine and rainbows. I can promise you that. There's some down days. There's certainly some people that go after you. But that's a small portion of it. The overwhelming majority of what I've experienced has been a positive thing, and I've just really enjoyed it.
Well, back to the debate itself, I got to tell you, with the questioning that went on, I was extremely impressed with both of you in the way you handled the questions, responded to it. And what I told my readers was that, I would hope and expect that two trial attorneys would be able to handle that type of questioning scenario where it was back and forth and just so rapid fire, a debate with a 30-second response time, that's a really tough debate to handle. So, but I was very impressed with the way both of you handled it.
Anytime you tell lawyers that they can only talk for 30 seconds, it's difficult. That's the hardest part, for sure.
I didn't even think that was possible, personally, but then people don't think I can talk for 30 seconds. Which,
maybe you should have been a lawyer.
Yeah, not going to happen. So, anyway, any thoughts as we're going through this? You've actually just jumped to an official 58-42% right now. So we still got, we've got fully reports on 4 of 41 with partial reports on 37 of 41. Looks like you're coming out to a pretty strong lead so far there, John, but we've got a couple hours to go till all the results come in, so I wouldn't start counting chickens just yet, but I think you're coming out pretty strong there. So any final thoughts on how this went and anything like that?
No, I just want to thank the people. I mean, the people that got out and voted. We were out there in Otero County and Lincoln County tonight. Started the morning down in Rito, so got down to Alamo Gordo, went to the fairgrounds, Tate Center, out to William Strauss Civic Center. We just made the rounds to so many different polling locations, and it was good to see people showing up. Obviously, I would have liked to see more people showing up, but at the same time, I want to thank all the voters, all of my supporters, win or lose. This has been a great experience, and for the rest of my night, I'm home with my wife and my three kids, and one way or the other, my kids are real happy because Dad will be home a lot more. Looking forward to that. My kids have already started planning vacations now that I've got a vacation.
Well, that's awesome. Well, again, I want to wish you the best of luck. And right now it's looking pretty good for you. So it's not an overwhelming lead. Like Trump has got like 72% right now. So I think we could pretty much call the race in New Mexico for Trump on that deal. But, there's still enough precincts that we shouldn't be counting our chickens just yet. But I think you're doing fairly well, and of course, I will advise you when I know that we could actually call the race either for or against you there, John. In the meantime, I wish you the best of luck. Did you have any questions for
me? No, John, very nice to talk to you again.
You too, Jason.
All right. Then take it easy, John. Good luck. Bye-bye.
And as I said, Mr. Sugg, John, my good friend, did win that election. I believe he beat his opponent, Mr. Dave Ceballos, the current DA, by somewhere around 25, 30 points, as I remember. So the way it's going to work is that John is now, I guess, the DA-elect. Dave sits in his office, continues his work through November. Then the general is going to happen, which John's running unopposed in the general. So once it's official, come November 7th, whenever the general is going to be, you will then see John taking office. As I recall, they almost swap out immediately for legal requirements once that election is passed. They don't wait till January. The next interview I got was with Miss Robin Holmes, the deputy chief county clerk for Otero County. And she's going to explain a little bit about how the election went back on June 7th. And she is running. Miss Denise Guerre, who is the current county clerk, is not running. And what's going to happen if Robin wins is they will simply switch name tags on the office. Denise is going to continue as the deputy chief, whereas Robin will become the chief. So that's essentially what we've got going on. And here is, without further ado, Miss Robin Holmes.
Absolutely, Bob. Thank you. I'm going to turn it back over to Chez real quick. He's got an interview for you, and we'll wrap up after that. Chez?
Thank you very much, Jason. And we have the absolutely lovely and engaging Miss Robin Holmes, who is our deputy clerk right
chief
now.
Chief deputy clerk.
Chief,
yes,
oh, correct. Chief. I'm sorry, ma'am.
Yes.
Chief deputy clerk,
yes,
for our county. Okay, now you were previously our clerk.
I was actually previously the county clerk for two terms, starting in 2004.
Okay. Somebody's phone's ringing.
Yes, and I did. I ran and was successful both times, and then I was termed out.
Well, you see, that brings me a question. Okay, so you run, you do two terms.
Yes.
And then Denise ran.
Yes.
And she's now our clerk.
Yes.
But you can now run again?
Yes.
Interesting, because I thought when you turned out, you're done. You have to take a pause.
Yes, you do. You have to set out. Right.
There's something I didn't know. See, there is stuff I don't know, Jason. You think I know everything about politics.
I'm going to really weep many tears over this fact tonight.
Okay, so, Robin, we did have one question that came in from one of my readers. And I brought this up to you, and you made a very good explanation for it.
Okay.
And that I don't even understand. Okay?
Okay.
But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read what one of my readers put in, and I'd like you to respond to it.
Okay? Absolutely.
So what we've got is one of my readers gave us kind of a on-the-spot person's report that said Cloudcroft only allowed voters in their precincts, even though news reports on local radio said vote at any polling place. It was confusing to many, and several voters were turned away. So I was under the impression you could vote anywhere, but I live down in Alamogordo where you can vote at the three.
Well, first of all, Otero County. Oh, is it my turn now? Okay,
no,
thank you.
This,
okay,
please.
Okay, first of all, Otero County is a hybrid county. And what that means is that we utilize voting convenience centers, which we have four. We have the Willie Estrada Civic Center, we have the Taez Center, the Fairgrounds, and then we have in Tularosa. So those are our four VCCs. Those VCCs, anybody can vote at those as long as they are in those precincts, the Alamogordo precincts and the Tularosa precincts. Now, if you are in one of our 16 rural precincts, you are supposed to vote at each one of those locations, your one location, your rural precinct. If you would like to vote in the VCCs, you'll have to vote provisional. You've got to understand.
So what does provisional mean?
A provisional ballot just means that your ballot will not go through the machine at the time you're voting. It will be put in an envelope because we have to verify at a later time if you've already voted at your precinct, your rural precinct. Now, the rural precincts, they are not connected to the internet. So what they have signature rosters. Our VCCs are connected to the internet. So if you were to vote at the Taz Center, we would know at the Civic Center, if they pulled you up, if you wanted to go and vote another time, they'd pull you up and say, oh, no, you've already voted.
So you can't do the old Chicago vote early, vote
no,
often deal.
No, this is Alamogordo. We don't do that here. So
okay,
anyway,
gotcha.
That's the whole reason behind it. So if you're in a precinct that is one of our rural precincts, one of our 16 precincts, You need to vote there on election day if you haven't voted prior to that. If you happen to be in town, you can go ahead and vote at a VCC. You will have to vote provisional because the next day we'll have to verify that you did not vote in your precinct and try to vote at a VCC.
But in either case, you'll be verified the next day.
Absolutely.
And once it's verified you've only voted once,
yes,
your vote will count.
Absolutely, and we will not turn anyone away. Even if they are not registered to vote, the law in New Mexico requires you to be registered 28 days prior to the election. There are some people that come to vote and they are not currently registered. They insist on voting. We allow them to vote on a provisional ballot. So we don't turn anyone away. So I'm not exactly sure.
I think what the implication was a person went to the Cloudcroft, one precinct there, and should have voted in a different precinct that belonged to them.
Right.
So when they went to precinct, I'm just going to use a random number, one, they were supposed to vote at four's location, and they were told at one, you can't vote here, you have to go to four.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the radio reports, depending on what station you were listening to, could have added to that confusion a little bit, because down here in Alamogordo, we're accustomed to going to the three locations and doing whatever we want down here. So I could see that confusion occurring.
Absolutely. And we've tried to do everything we can. We have gotten out the information about the rural precincts and the voting convenience centers. We've sent out the information and all the water bills from Tularosa, Cloudcroft, Chaparral, Alamogordo. We've taken the information to the senior centers. We put it in the paper, on the radio. We're really trying to get it out.
Well, let me ask you this question. Okay, so let's say I walk into that precinct number one, and I'm supposed to vote in number four, and I tell you I refuse. I am going to vote right there. Would you do a provisional in that
Absolutely.
Situation?
But you are not qualified to actually vote in that precinct, so your ballot probably will not be counted.
It would be spoiled because they're going to give me the
It'll
ballot
be rejected.
For that one
yes.
and not the proper...
Because that's all they have, exactly.
Oh, wow. Okay, so now I totally understand the process. Okay, well, I appreciate that because when I got that, I was like, this seems really weird because I know what a great job you guys do and how are voters being turned away. So I wanted to nail that allegation down very quickly. Okay, so now let's move on.
Okay.
Other than that little skip, which I think you've explained very well, how did the election go?
We seem to have a great turnout today, and we have all of these wonderful poll workers that have gone out and worked very tirelessly today. They've been out at their polls since 6 this morning.
Wow.
A lot of them are just getting home now, mm-hmm. and we appreciate them so much. Without them, we could not conduct such a successful election, not to mention all the staff that we have in our office, our part-timers that we hire for this time as well.
Oh, I need to give a shout-out to one of your part-timers. Israel
Garcia.
Yes.
Garcia.
Rodriguez,
yes.
He was sitting right there handling the refresh on that, which you'd think would be a boring job. Okay, but trust me, it was absolutely essential
was
to Jason and I tonight.
Awesome.
And he was really paying attention to what we were doing. And as I'm talking, I'm signaling go up, go down, and he's getting it. And really helped us out tonight. So
he
I want you to give him a gold star for the day. Please.
Absolutely. He's been a tremendous help to us during our election season.
So, in general, you would say the election
was a success. Absolutely.
Very well. Okay,
very well.
And, you know, tomorrow on my Facebook page, Those Who Show Up Decide, I'll be taking the unofficial results and crunching the, you know me in numbers.
Absolutely.
I want to know percentages.
Right.
And I'm going to crunch them in relation because I just got the numbers from you for the 2012 and 2014.
Yes.
Which looks like it averages at about a 25-26% turnout for those 2 years.
It gets pretty close this year as well.
I want to see where we're at, what kind of a turnout we got, if it's on trend, or did we go higher, lower, whatever the case may be. So last question I've got before we wrap our show is, I hear tell, because you said it earlier, you're running for the clerk's office again. And Denise is not.
Yes.
You have an opponent on the Democrat side, Stephanie DuBois.
Yes.
Okay. But so beside the fact that you're obviously qualified, I mean, you've been it twice and then you stayed on during Denise's term as the deputy.
Yes.
I think you're familiar with the office.
Yes.
You know how to get to work.
I do know how to get here. I enjoy my job so much, and I consider it an honor to be elected as the clerk. And I hope that I can do it for another term. I hope that my constituents of Otero County will vote me in again because I will do an amazing job for them.
Well, and so I don't forget to do this in case Stephanie is watching or anybody that knows Stephanie. While she's not here tonight, otherwise we'd be interviewing her.
Right.
Okay, so I want to invite Stephanie onto my air at any time she wants to tell us what she's about.
Okay.
So that's an open invitation to her because I believe in absolutely a fair race on both sides. Now let me ask you one last question, and that is about Denise.
Yes.
Are you firing her?
When
if you get elected, you're going to throw her out.
Absolutely not.
Oh,
are you
okay.
kidding? Yes.
What's going to happen
Denise
to our
Denise is going to stay. She's going to stay, and she will be my chief deputy if I'm elected. I think we're a great team working together. We've done it for over 30 years. And,
well, your offices are side by side out there.
Yes.
So when you become chief and she becomes deputy, you're going to move offices, right?
We'll just move signs.
Oh, the name tag.
Yes. We're not going to move. Right.
Okay, Robin.
God's willing.
Do you have anything else you want to throw out there about elections in general, your candidacy, anything?
No, I think that we had a successful election. Everything turned out very well today. Just a couple little hiccups, nothing to write home about. I just want to encourage everybody that's not registered to vote to register before the deadline, 28 days prior to the election in November.
And registration is opening back up
on Monday. Yes, it will.
Yes. Yeah, so.
And we would like to get everybody registered to vote. In the general, everybody can vote regardless of whether they're affiliated with a party or not. So
okay.
If they want to be declined a state or a minor party, they're also eligible to vote.
And I did the math on the registration, and I want to say it's like October 6th, I think, is where it closes
it's
out.
It's 28 days prior, whatever the Tuesday is
so,
prior to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, somewhere
yes.
around. It's early October is when the closeout's going to be.
First Tuesday.
So it'll be, you'll have a good couple of months now to get registered.
Yes.
And obviously, the clerk's office itself is going to be pushing very hard to get as many people registered and be able to.
Exactly. We work very hard for these elections.
Yeah.
And whether we have a 10% turnout or a 90% turnout, we are doing the same work, the same everything that we do for every precinct. We do it for all the precincts. We don't just concentrate on one particular one. Everyone is very special to us, and we work to make the election a success.
Well, over the last 4 years that I've been heavily involved in politics here, I will tell you that I have never gotten a non-response or an incomplete response from this office. I've asked, I'm in here all the time. Crunching numbers.
Yes, you
and
are.
Oh, I'm one of your favorites, I know.
Absolutely. But we say this over and over again. If we don't know the answer, we'll find it for you.
You always have.
So.
Absolutely. And I've always appreciated that. So I think that's it. If there's nothing else, thank you very much for joining
us.
Thank
you very much.
And compliments to your
Absolutely.
Entire staff.
Oh, they did an awesome job. Thank you to them.
Even Denise. She did a good job, too.
Denise is awesome. She always does an awesome job.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay, thank you, guys.
One of the things that I like quite a bit about living here in the Big Basin is that when it comes to elections, and this isn't ego talk, it's just the circles that I run in, I know most of the politicians within our county. I'm very involved in politics, otherwise I wouldn't be doing the show, but I know many, many politicians, I know many community leaders, I know many business men and women, business owners in our county, and so it becomes very easy and very nice when we have elections, things like that. It's kind of like, a reunion of, everybody that you know in town, and doing these interviews. I've known Robin for a few years, I've known John for about a year now. It's very easy to talk with these guys, and it makes it a very casual conversation. When you're trying to do an interview with somebody you've never met, you don't know how they're going to react. They don't know what you're going to ask. It becomes stressful and doesn't always come off as natural. Talking with people like John and Robin is just like picking up the phone and saying hi to my friends. And I hope that both those interviews were beneficial to you guys and that you learned something about those candidates as well as their offices and what they do and what they're going to be doing. So with the few remaining minutes that we have left, what we're going to do is we're going to run through a couple of my other segments. We are going to start with my Lost Faith in Humanity section. This week, it is Now, every week it's pretty darn easy to find some reason to lose faith in humanity completely. And while it was very difficult to find a place to restore my faith, I actually found a place that I think I can go to every week and probably pull up a story and find something that will work to restore my faith. But as far as losing faith in humanity, we've got the headline off of Fox News. 5 Pennsylvania teens cited after posting photo with lineup of dead animals. Now, first thing, graphic material warning. If you choose to go to foxnews.com and look up this story about these 5 Pennsylvania, serial killers in training, just be aware that they put the picture on the thing, and they should have put a graphic content warning on it because it really shocked me quite a bit. The story says that 5 Pennsylvania teens were cited Wednesday for bludgeoning to death some of the creatures they were seen posting around on social media. Wildlife Conservation Officer Jason Kelly told Bloomsburg Press Enterprise the teens didn't have an explanation for why they killed opossums, raccoons, and bullfrogs on June 7th. And these 5 pinheads are sitting here. It looks like they're in the headlights of some vehicle. 2 of them have bats in their hands, and they got these animals laid out. And they didn't get them. They didn't hunt them for meat, for clothing, for any purpose whatsoever, except to get a thrill out of beating something to death. And as I mentioned, serial killers, it's been long established that when you go back in the history of serial killers, there is almost invariably telltale signs in their youth of them going and finding small animals, dogs, cats, squirrels, things of that nature, and doing absolute abysmal, heinous, barbaric torture to these animals, which to me is exactly what these kids did. Now, with that said, I guess the animals included 2 beaten opossums, a raccoon, 10 frogs, 2 pigeons, and a snake. And then it says, according to WNEP-TV, some of the teens graduated this month and were on their high school's football state championship team. Some kids that are good kids, college bound, never has any trouble with the law, trouble in school, made a bad decision. Jim Roth, the head football coach at Southern Columbia, told the station. Some of these kids are not even aware of all the laws as far as small animals. Mr. Roth, you are as much of a knucklehead as the kids that did this, in that your concern, your comment is about the laws that pertain to the animals. How about the torture that these teenagers put those animals through for absolutely no reason except a thrill? I don't know, maybe that would be something you ought to think about. And it just boggles my mind. I am not a PETA representative. I have leather jackets. I eat steak. I'm not a vegan. But at the same time, and I do absolutely, I've never been hunting. I'd love for somebody to take me, if anybody would trust me with a gun in my hand. But the point is that when you go hunting, at least in most cases, you're hunting for meat. There's a purpose to hunting. In the sense of sport hunting, that really seems off, that you want to get a trophy of a lion's head that you shot just for the purposes of doing that. That doesn't make sense to me, but I suppose that's legal. But these kids are even beyond sport hunting. These kids, just for the thrill, went out and beat these animals to death. And as far as I'm concerned, that's murder. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't care what the law says. The DA involved in this shouldn't be citing and giving these kids a ticket for what they did. They should be charged, and they should be evaluated for their mental health. They should not be taken on by any college that is going to put them on a football team and give them an opportunity to excel in that regard. The NFL should never pick up these knuckleheads. These are exactly the guys that have the huge potential to become domestic abusers and everything else hard in the world. As you can see, I have no love lost for these knuckleheads. But thank you, God, there is actually a restored faith to go along, as always, with my lost faith. And that is on the KOB.com website, which is a TV station up in Albuquerque. And it talks about a social worker who organized a private graduation for an anxiety-ridden teen. And I guess the pay it forward deal is if you know somebody, and I encourage everybody in the Big Basin, because you're in New Mexico, and what they say on the Albuquerque station here is that they look for these stories throughout New Mexico. So if you see somebody that you think is doing some real true good in our communities, you need to nominate that person for a Pay It Forward Award up in to the KOB, and they'll send a news crew, I'm sure, down here to Alamogordo and do a little story on them. In this case, this one teenager who I believe had cerebral palsy and as a result had been bullied for her entire scholastic career, had developed severe anxiety and simply could not go to the graduation, even to be there at the stadium, no less get up on the stage and walk across in front of all of those hundreds of people. It can be quite the terrifying experience for a regular person. Forget about somebody that has physical and mental issues and anxiety, as this teenager apparently did. Well, this social worker turned around, saw the need, and went and organized in a small conference room. I guess they had the superintendent, the principal, etc. there. Everybody in caps and gowns, all the speeches, all the hoopla that you would normally have with a full-size graduation, except downsize it to a single student. And just very, I don't think there were 15 people in the room. And you'd think that was sad, but no, that's exactly what this teenager needed so she would be able to celebrate her graduation. And it was all set up by this social worker. And that, you know, this story goes directly to what I was talking about the hatred in our politics and how angry we are at each other. My faith gets restored when I see somebody do something for someone that absolutely has no reason to do it for that person. I mean, just period. There's no reason for her to have done this except out of the kindness of her heart. And it meant so much. So KOB went and got the story, got the details, and then went and gave her an award. I think it was $400 as a thank you for what she did. And it was really a nice video to watch and see exactly what had happened in this particular case. And that's the things in our lives that we really need to be doing. So with that said, let me give a quick shout out to my buddies Louie and Chris and Don and Tookie over at Most Wanted Mobile Detail. Phone number 575-415-0256. They will come to you and clean your ride inside and out. Good friends of mine, Louie and those guys. So that's a wrap for this week here at Those Who Show Up Decide. This world is just going right down the tubes. There's very few stories like the one I just did. Please be good to one another. In the meantime, this is Matt Sergeant Chez signing off from the Leading Edge Network and thebigbasin.com. We will see you next week, 9 a.m. Saturday morning. May God bless you and may God bless America.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Those Who Show Up Decide with Alamogordo's very own privately commissioned Jim Henson creation. I'm talking about none other than that towering and talkative Alamogordian activist, Paul Master Sergeant Chez Sanchez. Before we leave, don't forget to send your Chez Bomb cereal box tops, request for autographed portraits, wage garnishments, and restraining orders to Those Who Show at hotmail.com. This has been Those Who Show Up Decide.